a choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's really profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Are you ready?
Scott and Sheila Granger, so nice to see you. How are you guys?
We're doing great.
Doing great.
It's just a blessing to have you on to introduce you to the audience. I'm truly grateful and elated to have connected with you guys. We have connected through Lester Rant's partner, Claudette. She actually knows you, Sheila. And yes. I got a picture of a card that read Squatch Fishing Outfitters. And I was like, well, I gotta know more about them. And so we've connected, and you guys are actually on our first evening, that first set of speakers that we have out in Georgia. And you guys are locals. You're taking us to a really cool location out there. And we're going to talk about all of this. So again, for the audio only audience, there is a video portion of this that you can check out. See these beautiful people here. All of it located below, as well as the transcript. You can get absolutely for free over there on Patreon. Come sign up for the afterthoughts as well as the hangouts that we're doing. There's incredible stuff going on over there. So you guys do not miss it. So now that we got that going, guys, you're going to be located down below all the ways, Squatch Fishing Outfitters on Facebook as well as your TikTok. Scott just got into the world of Instagram. Welcome, brother. It is nice over there. We can connect a lot of folks that way. And guys, it's so cool to see you. So I'm going to get out of the way, let you introduce yourself in your own words, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right.
You want to go first?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You go first then.
Yeah. We're Scott and Sheila Granger. We're the owners of Squatch Fishing Outfitters. We're here in LJ, Georgia, North Georgia Mountains. We've been outfitting with this situation for about going on our third season with the Bigfooting Park. It's been a real trying time getting started.
But every year it's improved every year.
It took us a little over a year to get permits just to do all this. We're the only folks up here that are permitted by the National Forest System to take people out on these type of events and adventures. It's been a blast. It's been a real success so far.
We've been Bigfooting how long? About 7 years?
About 7 years, going on 8 years. And it's been great.
If somebody would have told me we'd moved to North Georgia and be doing this, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, I'd ask them what they were smoking, because apparently they didn't know me, and here we are.
And I got drug into this. Yeah, I got drug into this. She drugged me into it.
Yeah.
You got to have something to do when you're older.
Yeah, and it's like, it is a drug, right? It almost drugs you. It lulls you out to the woods on the weekends rather than, you know, going to a bowl game or something like that. And it's just interesting, the trade-offs. And of course, Scott, you do amazing fly fishing excursions out there as well, that you guys do a combination of your Bigfoot excursions, which we're going to talk about, as well as fly fishing, or either or, which is fascinating, guys. So the outdoor component and the nature reverence and the wisdom that you guys have just about life itself is just what's so beautiful as well. Plus your relationship, guys. Personal note here, audience, I know these folks a little more intimately since we've gotten to speak a little bit. We've done a couple of guest spots, which has just been badass. In fact, I'll link a couple of those below. Appalachian Intelligence as well as Ascension of the Chessmen. That was a blast. So we've gotten to spend some time together, and I'm just in love with you two, both of you as people, but as a couple. You guys are who, like, my wife and I look at couples like y'all and just say, wow, you guys are incredibly cool and connected and just conscientious about each other. So the sweetness that you two have together, definitely, I just wanted to articulate to the audience, is absolutely authentic. They're just beautiful people, and you can come hang out with us. So Sheila, what made you fall in love with this beautiful man right here? How did y'all meet? What's your story as a couple?
Okay.
I'm sure it involved Bigfoot, right?
It involved handcuffs.
Okay, go on.
Actually, I met Scott online, believe it or not, because at the time I was a cop, and you know, it's kind of hard to get out and meet people, especially people that you know that you're scared you're going to run into somebody you really know. So we found out he was in law enforcement, and we talked for the longest time, back and forth, talked on the phone, until we finally met one morning over breakfast, because I had worked all that day before, and then worked off-duty security at a job, and then and he worked graveyard shift. And from that day on, we've been inseparable.
Absolutely.
We literally really have, from that moment, that day on, we've been together ever since. Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely beautiful. And y'all's relationship is just gorgeous. To see you two like together, just interacting together, it's just a really testament of conscientiousness, which I think is the most valuable commodity any one person in a relationship can offer. But it, when both of you are that way, you're just so mindful of one another, and just, it's graceful. It's just really cool how you support each other, how you speak with each other. You can tell that there's just a lot of support there. And so that's what's beautiful. It's evident, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And, you know, we're both retired law enforcement officers, and like Sheila said, you know, in that line of work, it's kind of hard to meet someone and, you know, and deal with someone in a situation, because you don't know who your surrounding area there is. Especially with me, I was in the prison system, and, you know, you have all kind of different folks coming in there, and you can't just talk to anyone.
I think it was meant to be. Otherwise, you know, like I say, we talked for a while before we ever even met, and then we bonded over grits and eggs.
It's awesome. I mean, why not? You know, it's the most beautiful thing in the world. And both being in law enforcement, did you, because I know that a lot of people who do, like, let's say astrology, whenever they start dating someone, they look up their birth chart and they get really into their, and so they figure out what kind of person they are with their modality. Did you two ever, like, you know, independently when you were a law enforcement officer, start dating someone and then look up their history and be like, oh, I can't do this. Did you guys ever get into that?
You got to plead the fifth on that one. Because
I don't think it's question you can answer now that I'm in hindsight. No. So Squatch Fishing Outfitters is beautiful. You guys have the coolest thing going on out there. Tell us a little bit more about that, if you don't mind.
It was actually really easy. We both retired. We moved up here, and I was wanting to get into the fly fishing guiding. We got into the Bigfoot realm, and went on a few expeditions with another organization. And we saw how all that worked, and we really weren't overly impressed with the way a lot of the aspects of it went, because it turned into be a money thing. And
it was a lot of socializing more than anything.
A lot more socializing and everything than what we were wanting to do. So we sit down and we talked about it, and we put pen to paper pretty hard and says, what could we do this for at the absolute bare minimum cost to where anyone that wanted to could do this? Yeah. And we come up with a number, and we said, well, let's do this. And so I started researching on everything, what I had to get done to be able to do this. And once I got all my paperwork and everything taken care of, like I said, it took me a little over a year to get all the permits and everything done for us to have this outfitter business. And a lot of that had to do with about the Bigfooting part. The fly fishing thing I could have had done in 3 months.
Get that at Cabela's on the weekend. You're going
up to the federal office there, you know, and telling them what you want a permit for. And it's kind of shocking to them.
And what was real funny about that to me was when I told them, there wasn't a laugh, crack, a smile, or nothing in that room. They all just kind of nodded their head and says, well, let's sit down and talk about this.
Outstanding. And that's a good representation for your, you know, local municipality. That's nice.
Yes.
Well, you know, it was. And we did. And we went through all that. And they got all my stuff gathered up. And we finally got that going and started off our first season. And all that went well. I mean, went real well, actually.
Yeah, went better than we thought.
Yeah. I mean, there was more of everyone wanting to do it. And met a lot of nice folks. A lot of those folks still come back and go with us today. Every chance they get. We have them. They come all the way from New Jersey, Virginia. Yeah. We've got a group this year. They're going to go with us one time. They're out of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. They're coming all the way down for that.
Some great accents up there.
Yes, definitely.
Speaking of great accents, you two. Yes. It's beautiful.
And we put on two events every year to where we do it in a Bigfooting and fly fishing combo. I take a certain amount of them that want to go fly fishing, on a Saturday morning, we all go out, get off and go fly fishing for a little while. And a lot of folks really enjoy that because it breaks things up.
Yeah.
There's actually been a lot of fly fishermen that have had sightings.
Yeah, there is. It's a pretty common thing with fly fishermen because we go to remote areas, and up here in these mountains, you can get pretty remote. I have one area that I go to that I don't carry clients to, but I go to for my own fishing needs. And if I'm up there 10 times, 7 or 8 times out of those 10, I'll get whooped at up there. I keep waiting to see him and watch him walk across the creek down in front of me.
Damn.
But it's pretty regular.
It's so interesting. So I got to hear about why Bigfoot. What put Bigfoot on the radar?
I've always been a big fan of, Boggy Creek. If you've never seen that Legend of Boggy Creek, you've got to watch it. It's 1972 movie. I believe it's an older. I love older movies. I love scary movies, horror movies, so it was on top of the radar. He had never seen it, so I had him watch it. And then I think we started watching Finding Bigfoot, and we're in South Georgia still, and, talking about what if and blah, blah, blah. And so when we moved to North Georgia, I seen an advertisement for a Bigfoot expedition, and I begged, we've got to go to this, And so we did, we signed up for it, and lo and behold, it was just a couple of miles down the road from where we were living at the time. Couldn't believe it.
Yep.
So we did. That was our first experience, and that weekend we were hooked. That was it. Either you're going to be traumatized and you'll never go back in the woods again, or you're just going to stay in the woods seeking more answers, and that's what it's been for us.
And she got me to go to that thing, and I was like, I was that guy that we talk about to this day, and I'd hunted and fished in swamps and the river bottoms all my life. Heard a lot of crazy things. Saw a lot of crazy stuff, but never put 2 and 2 together about what it, possibly could have been. Really, it just never did concern me. And we dove off into this situation here. And the more I learned about it, the more I heard, the more I saw, my reflections were coming back to me. Like, I've heard this and I've seen this before. Just didn't know what it was. I've been around this mess all my life and just never acknowledged it. And then that fatal day came when I finally got to see one, and all that, thinking and believing and all that turned into reality.
How many excursions did you go on before you had your first sighting, Scott?
How many did we go on?
Oh my gosh.
Well, now,
maybe when five?
Probably 5 excursions with organized excursions.
With a different group that we started with.
Yeah, but we had been doing it on our own with some friends of ours and stuff a lot more.
It was your organized event in which you had your first sighting?
No.
No.
Okay, we were out scouting for another group that we were going to go camping with. And it was just, when I had my sighting, it was 3. But that night we were camping early, right?
Yeah, we were there 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was just us and a couple of friends.
See, it wasn't an intentional, we paid, we're going to be here, we're looking for Bigfoot. We're scouting for a place to take people to Bigfoot, and that's when you see it.
Right. Wow. I think the bigger the group, the less likely you are to really have any kind of interaction. That's why we try to keep our groups small. If you take a group of 50 people out, I realize you might be breaking off with the smaller groups, but still,
Yeah, you start stacking that many folks in the woods and everything, all your wildlife and everything kind of sits back and they watch you. They're still there, but they just sit back and they watch and observe. They're not going to want to interact as much. And we limit our participant list down to 10 people. We have come up with that number because it's a good workable number. It's enough people to stay safe with, but yet not enough people to overwhelm the forest itself.
And we break off too in separate groups.
And we break that into separate groups. And it's, like I said, we've had a lot of really good success with it, doing it the way we do it. We probably had at least 2 dozen sightings last season, either on thermal, night vision, or a couple of daylight sightings.
Yeah. We took a family out who wanted to, it was just an excursion just for a few hours. Their son wanted to go Bigfoot hunt, and it was his birthday. request. So they told him to pick what he wanted, and that's what he wanted. He wanted to go out looking for Bigfoot. I think he was turning 14 or 15. I can't remember. So we took him and his mom and his dad out. And, I told Scott, I don't know if we're going to have any activity. I hope we do. We had no idea what was going to happen. So
you never do.
We got to a good spot, and we're sitting around the campfire for a while, and we hiked a while. But that night, all three of them saw one. Was it on Thurn?
Yeah, on Thurn.
And, the mother was probably the most excited. She was elated. To this day, she still can't believe it.
They hit the lottery that night. They got to hear them howl. They got to hear them, whoop around a little bit. And we got back up around the campfire, and I heard it, and I got my thermal up, and I caught him running across. But he was moving so fast, I couldn't get him to slow down, to stop for them to be able to see him.
Right.
So just a little bit, I heard it again. I got looked up again and saw him, and got the youngster to look at him first because it was his birthday. He was the one there for it. So I got him focused in on that, and he finally saw it. And he's like, you always know when somebody sees it, because they take that deep breath all of a sudden, oh, my goodness, because it's standing out there. It's just, it's great. But he got to see it, and the mom eased over there, and she got it from him, and she focused in, and she saw it. And then the dad gets over there, and, I knew the dad was a skeptic from the word go. So he's looking over there, kind of nonchalantly, and about that time that gasp comes, and he's like, oh my goodness, and he says, and I said, well, tell me what you see. And he started telling me about it. And he said, hang on just a second. He said, this thing just stepped all the way out from behind the tree. And the light was just good enough that I could see him step out, a shadow step out from behind the tree. But here he is, got a good thermal on. So he's seeing it real great.
Damn.
I told them after all that little bit right there, I said, y'all need to go play the lottery.
Yeah, it's almost like it was a birthday special occasion and really put on a show for that kid and its family.
We were not expecting that at all.
Not that much. And we never can guarantee anything. You're dealing with a wild critter, and I call them critters. You're dealing with a wild critter in the woods, so you can't guarantee anything.
I think, though, I'm curious to see about if you have some data points that you collect from some people, as in if they have military in their family, if they have indigenous background, especially on their mother's side and the female's side, and as well if they are astrology. If you get their astrology, just their place of birth, time of birth, and date of birth, you can determine a lot. My wife Mary is going through the second course of Ksenia Moore right now, and she can show you that if you have a certain planet or a certain number of planets in your 12th house, you are a magnet for the freaky woo-woo. So I'd be very curious to see if you took those data points, figured that out. My wife would be grateful to do this for you real quick, and see if you get a collection of people with those houses in their 12th, those planets in their 12th house, if you kind of got them together, or if they maybe magnetically just came together synchronistically, right? And then you saw what kind of outcome the different type of folk out there have, the effect they have on the environment, or the way the phenomena responds to them, kind of thing. And then even time of day and year that you go out there.
That really is interesting.
It was fascinating. The more she goes into this astrology shit, the more fascinated I am by it. She'll go, oh my God, hey, come here and look at this. And she'll say something about somebody's planet in the third house. I bet their dad died when they were young. And I'll ask this person, and for damn sure they did. And it's just incredibly interesting. So it may be what I think that should be a data point added to the MUFON collection, like the MUFON Mutual Organization for UFOs and their reporting systems, is to add some new things to see a more comprehensive set of data that would come in with that. Because I think it plays such a fascinating role in all of this.
That makes sense, because
really good, yes.
I think once you have an experience, deciding, you'll have more.
Yeah, you're really open to it. Just like people say that a UFO will land, and then the next night, Bigfoot will be there, and then the next night, they'll have, and then from then on, they'll have paranormal activity in their house forever. So it's really interesting that this does sort of open you up, and you guys went looking around in the woods for it, which is great. So that's a question, too. Mm-hmm. Has any of it followed you home? Or any other ancillary phenomena, UFOs, anything else?
Oh yeah. Well, you want to tell her about the time? Tell them about the time with the.
With Fred.
With Fred.
Oh, we've named it. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, we named this one. I had the name. Our daughter had rented a home
They were buying it.
They were actually buying it. And lo and behold, the gentleman that had owned the home committed suicide in the backyard. You know, tragic
thing. A couple of days before, they closed on the house.
And they were having some things go on. So we went over and, you know, looked the place over a little bit. And Sheila done some staging there for her and everything. And, you know, try to help this entity move on, go on about its own business. And we start back home. And she told me, she said, you know, I forgot to do something. I said, what? She said, I forgot to sage myself and do what I'm supposed to do when we leave. I said, okay. I said, well, maybe nothing will happen. We get home, and at that point in time, our house was a slab foundation. So there's no vibrating, no rattling. You can't bounce up and down and make nothing happen. We'd be laying in the bed at night, and one plate would fly off of a china thing that we had sitting in the kitchen. It wouldn't just fall. It would be out in the middle of the floor. And I've cleared that house a couple of times over that one plate. And I set that plate up there. I'd get beside that little cabinet, and I'd jump up and down this floor. I'd shake the cabinet. I'd do all kind of stuff trying to make it fall. I couldn't make it fall. So finally, I put the plate up. I just laid it down, put it up where it couldn't do anything. We had a 100-pound boxer at the time, and of all things, his name was Grim.
My baby.
And, you know, he loved us to death, but he always wanted to, he's a big old boy. He wanted to get up on the side of the bed, you know, and tell me good morning and stuff. And I used to get after him pretty good. And one evening I'm laying there waiting on her to come to bed, and I feel Grim crawl up on the end of the bed with me. And I get up, I'm going to smoke him. I know it as good as I'm right there. I'm fixing to get after him. I sit up in that bed and turn around, and Grim is not there. He is in the living room laying on his bed. Something, you could physically feel it sit down on that bed with me. One more night went by, and we had a clock sitting in that room that was the only light in the room. And it would cast a little bit of light on my wall.
The red.
Yeah. And I'm laying there, and I watch a shadow walk across my wall. And I spin around because I know the only light in this room is at that clock on the other side. There's nothing in our room. I finally tell Sheila, I said, I can't take this no more.
Sage your shit.
We're going to have to do something. But the best part I haven't told you yet is that I'm off working. And she calls me one day. She says, what is wrong with the TV? It just turned off. I said, honey, that TV don't just turn off. And I said, a thing will come up and tell you it's going to shut off. And it'll give you so many minutes to decide whether you want to keep watching it or not. She said, no. She said, it just turns off. I said, no, it don't, unless you had a power flicker. And she said, no, but nothing like this happened. I said, okay. So I blow that off, and we're sitting there eating dinner one night. And by this time, like I said, I've already named this thing Fred. And we're sitting there eating dinner one night, and the TV turns off, just turns off. Nothing has happened power-wise or anything. I spin around there, I look over, I said, Fred, turn that TV back on. Lo and behold, the TV turns right back on.
No way.
That's when I told her, I said, you've got to do something. We've got to do something or move. One of the two. And that happened, and I have had other instances happen. There's a place here that Les has told you about it. Les Durant has told you about this place. We were in it. And I actually physically seen an aberration appear.
First time he saw one.
First time I'd ever saw one.
Shoulder, what will you describe full it? Body.
Full body. You could see, it was pretty solid, but you could see through it. She was translucent, but you could, pretty solid.
During the day.
Teenage girl.
Okay.
Wearing a white dress down just below the knee length. Appeared to have brown hair. And she appeared there in a doorway of a closet and stood there for just a second watching us and then just dissipated away.
Could you see eyes like follow you and everything?
Yes.
Making eye contact with you?
Yes. It was a full body.
How did you feel whenever you saw it? What feeling came over you?
Really not a lot of feeling at all. It was just like an awe feeling.
Okay, like, so not terror or fear
Nothing like that. It was just like, you know, a shock feeling.
Yeah.
Like, can't believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing. And the gentleman that was with us, when all this happened and transpired, he was looking at me. He says, "You just saw something, didn't you?" And I explained to him what I'd saw. And that place is well known for stuff like that.
Three little girls.
Chaplain or Charlemagne House? What is it?
It's Chastain.
Chastain. That's right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I was holding a flashlight there one night in my hand, and we were talking. It was just all of us upstairs. Well, like five of us upstairs. Yeah. And I asked them if they could turn the flashlight off, and the flashlight went off mm-hmm. in my hand.
Did you feel anything, pressure, anything, the button turn on or off or anything?
It's rolled. We've set light on the floor. Okay. It went completely. I mean, on the end of the flashlight, it's a small flashlight about this big. On the end of the flashlight, you literally have to push the button in to get it to come off wrong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was holding it like this, and it went off completely off, and you could turn it right back on.
Yeah.
It was depressed. The button was depressed.
Yes, it had to be pressed.
Yeah.
Wow. And you didn't feel it press. It just happened. No. Wow. I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And we've had a few things like, you know, like that go on. And with everything else we have that we do, our families both thought we were crazy when we first started doing all this.
Oh, yeah. They still think we're.
Oh, but you're my younger brother. Stronger than ever. I love it.
Well, I tell you, my kids, they will not come outside after dark. If they do, there's two of them. If they forgot something in the car, had to go outside, they don't come outside.
They've had some experiences up here.
Oh, I'm curious about, let me ask about the house real quick, because if there are spirits still there, how is there nobody that's gone in and sort of saged the area and said, "Hey, you guys can move on"? Or have they done that and it just didn't work? Yeah. At any location, honestly, if you just go in and sage the thing, could they just cross over?
I think there's so much of a lot of things going on there. There's running water, life well on the house, I think, which really keeps things active quite a bit.
Right.
And there's just so much history to that house.
Yeah, that house has an extreme amount of history.
A lot of sage then, huh?
Oh, it would probably
take a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's so bad, you know, like people will go up there. There was a plaque. It's a historic house. So there was a plaque up there on one of the front pillars. People have stole that, you know, and they finally got that. Just constantly in there. They've tried to redo the house. They literally gutted it and put a lot of stuff out in the barn, you know, but it's like people come and try to work on it and they don't stay very long.
No. Wow. They don't hang out and work on that place long.
Okay, I need closure on your house story with Fred. How did Fred move on, and what did you do? If anybody's experiencing this, what's your protocol?
I helped him move on. We saged the house and cleansed it. So I just think that they know, you know, if you can pick up on that kind of stuff, and, you know, they're going to stick with somebody. You know, like if you were, I don't know, in France or something, you know, and you couldn't speak the language, and then what, you see one person that spoke your language, you're going to go to that person.
That's a great analogy. There's an interesting book, and I probably don't have it near me. I do not, but I read it first book this year, and it's called The Unquiet Dead by Dr. Edith Fiore, and it's fascinating. And one of the most, well, it's terrifying and fascinating. And one of the most interesting things I thought about was that they can just latch onto you at any time. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that was. And it was that whole thing, what I explained, that went on for a couple of months.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't like a 2 or 3 day deal.
And it wasn't just one cleansing. It was a couple of times.
And it almost knew that you were the one that could do it. You know, it's almost like it saw you saging the area and knew that you maybe could get it one step closer. And so it just came and bothered you. You know, it was the squeaky wheel for a little bit until it got the oil, which is great. And you just knew how to move it on.
They can tell if you're sensitive to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like if you're ignoring them or not, they can totally tell that if they're not able to get your attention. And so the ways that they're able to get somebody's attention, if it is effective, that's a sign to them probably.
Yes.
Interesting. Gosh, this whole thing is just so fascinating and complex. Okay, Sheila, your first big hairy man sighting in the woods. What was that like?
Wasn't expecting it at all. We were scouting for an upcoming camping trip. Wasn't with our business. We were with actually one friend at the time. It was about when I had the sign. It was 2 o'clock during the afternoon. And I usually carry a gun in the woods with me and my phone. I carry the gun because I'm really scared of wild hogs. You know, they'll tear you up, especially around here. There's a lot of them. we had already walked around quite a bit. And so we were going to walk up behind the ridge and come up on top of where our cars were parked way down there and just look down there for some reason. So we went walking through the woods. It was pretty thick in there. Mm-hmm. And we were going to start up the ridge, and him and our friends seen some rubbing on a tree that they stopped to look at. Well, this was in September, so I'm going on up the ridge there, because while I had momentum, I was going, because it was a kind of a rugged climb. There wasn't a whole lot of foliage still on the trees, some. I got to the top, and I'm looking down at our cars, you know, and I'm looking at all the roads, dirt roads that's joining in together up there. Wasn't thinking anything. I thought they were coming up the ridge behind me, and I heard, you know, what I figured was a clicking sound, and now I know they make a clicking noise with their tongues. It's like a distraction. So I turned, took a step back, and I looked at my 4 o'clock to see what it was. You know, and I'm looking, and it's about 25 yards away, a lot of trees, but I see some movement, like swaying. And I look, and I said, Scott, because I thought he was coming up the ridge, you know. And I'm looking at this, whatever this was, it's kind of like a cinnamon color, hands around a tree, and it's swaying a little bit more. And this shoulder was still on that side of the tree. And I'm looking at him. He's looking at me. We had eye contact. The face looked like leather, so like weathered leather. There was no hair on the face. And I said, Scott. And he said he knew. And I said the second time something was going on. So they come running up the ridge line there. And when he gets there, I'm pointing. I said, there was a Bigfoot standing right there, you know. And I'm shaking. And our friend and I took off running when I had pointed out which tree it was. We took off running down there. So when we get there, it was on a decline. So if I'd called out, you know, looking for a suspect that's 6 foot tall, now this one would have been about 7.5 foot tall, because it was, like I say, on a decline. And Scott comes over there. You know, I haven't told a whole lot of people this, but when we found the tree, there was a huge pile of scat. I mean, it was like, if it had been cold outside, it would have still been smoking cold. And I mean, you could see where, when I said Scott the second time, whatever it was, just, I mean, drop like a puff of smoke. And you could see the tracks where something just dug out, but it was on all fours when it took off.
That's what's so wild about these things, reporting about them moving about in this area. And guys, we went to a scouting trip, and that's a side note for y'all. You know, don't book excursions, book scouting trips. That's where all the shit happens, right? Just, hey guys, we're not going on an excursion. This is wink, wink, Bigfoot, just a scouting trip. And you're gonna see all kinds of their shit, and you find their favorite shit and tree and everything. It's just such a wild environment out there. The hills are insane. You've got holly everywhere, which is a fascinating thing. I just thought this was fascinating. We're out there in our spot, and I'm looking around, and there's just holly everywhere. And of course, that's a magical plant, man. That's what the druids made their wands out of, and that's what Hollywood is named after, because it's of its spell casting property. So the whole area is fascinating, the whole place. And when you go out there, you can walk around just in a little piece of wood, and if you step one direction, you totally miss your car, your buddy, your friend, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's so easy for something to just step off to the side and be completely gone, especially these creatures. They've been adapted to be fearful of us, right? To see us. And like you said, Scott, this is an intimate part of nature that's watching you. It knows you're there long before you see it, right?
Long before.
Yes. And so again, these interactions with this wild beast out there, if you guys don't mind, talk to us a little bit about this finger tip stalking thing that you talked about on Appalachian Intelligence. I found this so fascinating because it just speaks again to the physical prowess of these animals.
I've never seen it. We've never seen it.
Right, but the phenomenon has been reported.
There's a lot of reports about it, and they'll belly crawl. A lot of people call it army crawl. Mm-hmm. Some people say they look like a spider when they're doing it, because they're on their toes.
That's what it is.
And on their fingertips, and they're, you know, just crawling easily
on their fingertips and their toes.
And it's a stalking method type thing. You know, they're easing up, you know, like a sniper would, to stalk up on his prey.
Yeah.
And it's the closest thing we ever had happen to us of anything like that. We had a group up on top of a mountain, and I had several people actually looking at two through thermals. And one gentleman, he was off to the side a little bit, and he was looking around with a night vision. And he was standing right at a game trail. Well, I've already been up at this place numerous times, and seen this game trail. Game trail is about a foot, foot and a half wide, with about 2.5 foot vegetation on each side of it. You know, so it's not real wide. It's just a pure old game trail. Mm-hmm. Well, he's standing over right beside it, and all of a sudden I hear a pop. I mean, and when I say a pop, I mean like something slapping you on the side of the leg or something. And he takes off. I honestly thought he was snake bit. I really did. And that was my fear, too, because here I'm a half a mile up on top of this mountain, you know, with these folks. And I literally had to catch him as he was coming by me and get him stopped. And I said, man, what is it? What is it? He said, something hit me on the leg. And so we ease on back over there and right where he was standing. I'm looking around for him. Maybe he stepped on a stick or something that flipped up, you know, and hit him on the side of the leg and spooked him a little bit. Or maybe something threw a rock at him, because I've got folks up here looking at too through thermals. And you know, nothing's on the ground right there. And I look over at this game trail. And now this game trail is about another foot and a half on each side. All the vegetation is crushed down for as far down it as I can look. I had a real good suspicion at that point what happened, but I wouldn't say that, you know, swear that that's what happened, but I had a real good thought of what happened. I think he had one slip up in there and played a little woo with him, just reached over and tapped him on the leg.
That's a game to them, to get as close as they can.
It is a game.
Yeah, like a ninja or something. They get right up in there and then just cut a piece of hair off of you or something and run off. And they're like, look what I got, guys. He's standing right over there. He's looking through thermals that way. And I snuck up to on the side. That's so wild.
Yeah, that was like the Native American warriors.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
where the woo comes from. They played a game of woo. They truly believed if they could touch their enemy, they didn't need to kill him because they like owned his soul then.
Damn.
And that was a game for them. And that's, you know, that's what we call it in this playing woo.
Playing woo. The freaking woo plays back.
Yeah.
We have been in areas now, like you're talking about the clicking or the whooping, where we know we're, you know, there's three or four there because there's one there making a noise and you can hear click. I think they make the clicking so it's a distraction. You look there while that one moves.
Right. Yeah.
It gets closer.
Like a velociraptor, man. Like in Jurassic Park when he's like, clever girl, and you just boom.
Damn. That's it. And it's, you know, very seldom do you ever see these things alone. There's usually at least two. You may not ever know that there's two. You may only recognize that there's one, but there's another one around.
Really? And what's the deal with them hanging out with Dogman and stuff like that? Have you guys seen anything like that with Bigfoot and another type of entity? Let's say an alien, a little person, anything like that?
We've had UFO activity and then have, you know, aggressive Bigfoot activity shortly after.
Right after, yeah.
UFO and then aggressive Bigfoot activity. What would you classify as aggressive Bigfoot activity?
Pushing over about an 8-9 inch diameter tree, green tree.
While we were camping up in the graveyard.
While we're camping right there beside, less than 50 yards from our camp.
Green tree, for those listening, not southern, it means alive. Damn.
Yes.
So a living rooted in the ground, very used to, I'll interpret for the global audience.
If you can imagine this, a silent bulldozer going up to a tree and start pushing on it, a live tree, the cracking sound you would start hearing before it snapped and went over.
We've had a lot of stuff thrown at us. We've had a log, I call it a log about that big, thrown, you know, arc when it went up and then come down. We've had little rocks thrown at us, which we make that a game sometimes.
Yeah.
And on the tree, just real quick, they'll snap the tree rather than uproot it from the ground and pull, you know, because sometimes storms will uproot trees with the whole root ball and everything. This is not that. They'll snap a green tree.
They'll snap it off.
And twist.
How high up do you know? About how high from the bowl or the ground to the snap?
That one wasn't very high up. It was probably about 4 foot off the ground where it was broken at.
But I mean, to exert that force at that height.
Yes. Wow. On about an 8-9 inch tree.
It make you pucker, I'm going to tell you that. Make you want to get in the car and go.
Well, let me ask you this. When it came down, did it come down in your direction? Or which direction from you did it come down in? Did you note that?
Could not see it.
We couldn't see it when it fell.
Right.
You know, because it's nighttime when it fell.
There was no wind blowing.
Yeah. Zero wind. We had great weather. The smoke from the fire that we had was going straight up.
And that's the night when we finally went to bed about 5 that morning, and it came walking up to our tent, stood over our tent.
Mm-hmm. And we have a tent that I'm 6 foot tall and I can stand up in the tent. And we're laying there, you know, just got all bedded down for the night real good. We're laying there and you could hear it walk across gravel and walks all the way to our tent. And I can hear this breathing over top of our tent. And I'm thinking to myself, big boy, whatever you do, don't push down on this thing because she'll exit this thing stage left.
I will take the tent mile with you.
Just and feet in off. The tent.
and he walked off, went on about his way after he stood there and breathed for about 2 minutes.
Do you say anything out loud to them, or is this in the mind?
We've said some stuff
out loud. We say some stuff out loud. We had one friend that was very vocal with them. He talked to them a lot. Yeah. And talk smack back and forth at them and
everything. Show yourself. Yeah.
And but you know, we talk, it's not like carrying on a conversation or anything, but we do talk to them.
Yeah. Do you ever hear, I know this is gonna sound weird, no one's gonna think you're crazy, because it's a very common phenomenon, that an engagement or a telepathic communication or even a feeling that entity is sending you some sort of message?
Yes. Yes.
She does more so than I do.
Some people are more sensitive to it. Do you have indigenous? Do you have indigenous blood in your family?
I don't know. We're going to have to get your wife to look that up.
Well, that's in lineage. We can do your astrology, but do you have anyone in your family with indigenous blood, like Native American blood or anything?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Family member, military in the family?
Yes.
Grandfather? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. That's all. Have you, Sheila, do you think you've ever been on a UFO? Even maybe in a dream? Has anyone visited you and said, let's go for a ride on this?
I've had some dreams that were have there lately. But I've never dreamed of being in a, you know, nothing like that.
Lately, you say?
Oh, yeah, it's been crazy. I've got up the past couple of mornings, told him, I was like, you're not going to believe what I've been dreaming. But, you know, it's like, you know, everything's going on in the world. I don't know if that's getting in my head or.
I don't know. I would say don't dismiss it. I'm interested in your dream journal. Start in one of those things when you wake up. Just here's what my.
I've got up before in the morning time and told him, you know, or he knows when I'm dreaming or when something's happened, because I've had people whisper in my ear my name, you know, and that'll wake me up.
Do you get buzzing in one of your ears, like a ringing, a high pitch ringing?
Oh, yeah, all the time. That I know, I had that a lot. But I heard Sheila, you know, I've been in the kitchen before and turn around and see somebody standing there. But to me, it's because of, you know,
what you do,
what I do now. So I think a lot of things may attach to me and I have to get rid of it sometimes.
It's almost chicken or egg scenario where you always predestined to sort of maybe in your DNA or something. Do you know your blood type? Is it O negative?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. I bet you got those planets in your 12th house too. This is just so interesting. The more we sort of look at these other angles with it, it's just so fascinating, because now there's some measurable data points with the phenomena, which is something that's not really been around, right? Jacques Vallée is famous for saying it's consistently inconsistent, which that's the most accurate way you can describe any of this shit, any of the freaky woo. But I do see something in astrology being a connection, especially in the questions I'm asking, military, indigenous blood, especially on your mom's side, stuff like that. There seems to be correlations to this, especially O negative blood. You have the invisible blood. And I would bet my bottom dollar that you got a planet or two that applies to it in that 12th house of yours that makes you a magnet for the freaky woo-woo. Scott, you probably got something going on as well, and you're at least attracted to it. I mean, you know, I get it, dude. You know, this world's fun.
She turned around and married an A-negative blood person.
Well, that you need the balance, though. You know, like I say in our relationship, I'm the kite, marries the string, right? You need one of you up there getting in the ether, really soaking it in with a semi-grounded perspective, I suppose. But we can fly that high because we've got such anchored partners, which is beautiful. You know, that's an awesome, awesome thing to have.
And that's exactly right, because I'm the one that's like, if a thought pops in my head, oh, let's go do it right now. You know, let's 110 miles an hour. And he's like, let's analyze this and think about this. And I'm going to, you know, we'll wait months. I'm like, oh my God, what's taking so long? Let's just do it.
But the meeting point between the two is where this incredibly cool thing happens, right? Yeah, I'm a lot like you, Sheila, but I'm also a lot like you, Scott. I've got a lot of outdoor practicality in this, you know, element, but I'm also the kite, man. You know, I want to know what the hell's going on out there. And, you know, it's like I picture Scott, you and my wife standing on the ground laughing your asses off at Sheila and I up there. And you're like, hey, we gotcha. We kind of trade off every now and then. And then that invites you all into a world of whimsy as well, which is really cool. Because it's almost like then the Benjamin Franklin idea where there is a key attached to that kite and you get mm-hmm. the buzz coming down whenever it gets hit with electricity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's,
that's a banger metaphor just happening on the spot.
Yeah, a lot of times we're in the woods and she's wanting to go do something right then, or
she's wanting to
venture off into something. And I say, don't do that. Her first thing is, why?
Why?
You know, this is my wife.
Let's just find out.
Why? Yeah. You know, and at that point in time, I don't have a lot of time to explain to you why right now, but I will. But not right this minute, but every time is why.
And my whole mindset is, my grandma told me, if you hear a booger, go look for it. Mm. So I want to go find out, where is this coming from?
And great segue, by the way, Booger Alley. I'm going to come back to what Bigfoot's told you in the mind, by the way. But Booger Alley, we're going to talk about here because you guys are going to take us out there. And if you don't mind, just tell us a little bit about that and why it's significant. But for the folks, for the Expanding Reality excursion in Georgia, May 15th through the 20th, we still have spots available if you want to come check us out. They are going to be speaking the very first night along with Trey Hudson. Then we're going to go hiking around in the woods out there. But the next day, our full day hike in Georgia, because we're doing three different states, Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina there. And so our Georgia day is at this legendary spot, hidden legendary spot called Booger Alley. Now, will you tell the folks, please, again, not from the South, what boogers are, please?
Boogers are Bigfoots. They're, you know, they go by a lot of different names. Like I said earlier, you know, I call them critters. Out West, they call them boogers. And this place that we're going, Brandon, is just boogery, and it's a pretty good trail. And there's a section in this trail. It was a long section in this trail that reminds you of being in a tunneled alley. Mm-hmm. And it's mountain laurel overgrown. And it's, you know, when you get to it, the minute you see it, you're going like, I know why this is called Booger Alley.
Like a portal.
Because it's for as far as you want to see that alley.
And running water.
Yep. And there's running water beside it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's one of them places that, you know, it's intense during the day. We've been there during the day and getting whooped at and different things. And it's very intense at night. And I stress that part about very intense, because it's just in one of those places, and it's in a place that we've had a lot of things go on and happen.
Very dark.
Like dark area or dark things happened?
No, it's in a very dark area, but no, yeah, like, things happen.
Like dark, like you can't see your hand in front of your face at night, kind of dark.
Yeah, because the density of the foliage out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You'd be in trouble.
And that's we nicknamed it that because just the atmosphere and the look of it.
And it looks like a tunnel. It's like this alley going down there.
Or a portal. It may be, you know, this really interesting vortex area. That's, I bet there's tons of quartz crystal under there, because you guys have a lot of quartz out there.
We have a lot of quartz here.
Mm-hmm. A lot of holly, a lot of quartz, a lot of magic. So interesting. Okay, so why Booger Alley? What kind of boogers can we expect at Booger Alley?
Well, we have the opportunity to see anything ranging from wild hogs,
bear,
mountain, or we call them panthers,
bobcats,
this big, tall, huge, hairy critter that we want to look for.
And plus, the don't forget, we've got this old graveyard, and I'm telling you, dog men tend to hang around graveyards. I don't know what it is.
God, have you guys seen Dogman out there, or signs of Dogman?
Scott had a picture taken with Dogman. Unfortunately, he didn't know it at the time.
What? Is this one of those things where it was in the back and you didn't find it until later?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, we were in another old graveyard. And I'm telling you, in that little, I get that little feeling, you know, I can't see it with my naked eye, but everything goes quiet. I mean, there's no crickets, no bugs, no birds. It just goes quiet.
Just for you, or Scott, can you notice the absence of...
I feel it too.
The air
See,
will be
that's
so
called thin. The Oz effect. Did you guys know that? It's like a term for it. called the Oz effect. When Freaky Woo Woo happens, yeah, that all nature goes silent. All nature.
Because they like know everything. There's a predator wind. Here.
Yes.
In nature, when you have a large predator enter the area, everything else is going to get quiet because they don't want to be the next meal.
Right, right.
And
But when that happens, I've done it a couple of times, you know, I'll start, just give me a sign, or start taking pictures, just randomly taking pictures everywhere. And that one was as pretty as you please. I mean, you could see the pointy ears, you could see the eyes and, you know, silhouette. And I'm like thinking, I've got to debunk this. This, you know, I've got, before I can say this is something standing there, I've got to debunk this. So the next day. Rode back out there by myself.
Here's my wife.
Gotta go.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm going to go back out there. The weather's the same. I'm going to go out there at the same time. We'll stand in the same spot and take these pictures. And I did. And there was nothing close to it at all. I could not recreate that picture, you know. So, yeah, I have no doubt whatsoever.
It's almost like maybe, yeah. Scott, you drugged Dogman out or summoned it almost just by you being there. It's almost like,
We were there. It came up to watch, but and that thing was less than 30 yards away from me.
Yeah.
Oh. God.
Yeah. He had no idea in the picture. He could see in the picture. He didn't have a clue.
Do you notice any smells or anything associated with it? Because I know sulfur is a big one. Or Bigfoot allegedly smells like 20 corpses that are on fire together, or Bigfoot's, something like this.
I've smelled once with a Bigfoot. It's like walking into a brick wall. It just, oh my God, it's the worst smell you could think of. I mean, it's just, it'll make your eyes water. You'll like start gagging. But with the dog man, it smells earthy to me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That'd be awesome to come up with a line of scents, you know, dog man and then Bigfoot, right? And you have a more earthy shade.
There's a few of the soaps out there to claim it, but, them soaps smell a lot better than these things, what we smell. Yeah,
right. Maybe they're meant for Dogman and Bigfoot. They're like, here, we want to give you this soap so you smell better. It's interesting, too. So do you think the animal's emitting that smell, or that it came from an environment that smells like that and a little environment came through with him,
a portal? Honestly, this is just my take on it. And, you know, there are no experts in these fields. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of folks that have a lot of really great knowledge.
And ideas.
And ideas and theories. But my take on it is, I actually believe that these things emit this smell. That I don't know if they do it, you know, like a skunk does it, or, you know, trying to be nice on the air about it. But
yeah, like a gland or something.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like that, or if they can emit it, you know, through genitalia or how, but because we'll smell that and be in the same area. And then all of a sudden not smell it. It's not like, you know, it's a hang around, linger, stays there smell.
Yeah.
And I carried one group. Matter of fact, it was the night the guy got slapped on the leg by something. I had four different areas up through there that we walked into this wall of smell. And if anyone's ever smelled, you know, big cat urine, it's pretty potent.
That is potent. And,
is extremely potent, and it had nothing on this what we were walking into smelling. And you'd walk about 5-10 yards maybe at the most, and you'd walk out of that smell just as fast as you walked into it. We go a little further up the trail, we'd walk into it again. Well, I marked the areas where we were hitting the smell at, and on the way back we hit the same smells, but they were in different areas. It's like this critter was crossing the trail in front of us
or behind us,
and that's the question. If you followed the smell that way or that way, would you have followed the path, you know what I mean, of this thing serpentining through the woods?
It's real good that you say that, because the same gentleman that got popped on the leg, he has got some of the best night vision
pictures
you ever want to see. And he took them, he was taking them, but he wasn't sure that he was taking a picture. And this actually worked out great, because he took 11 pictures. You know, not sure if his little unit was taking pictures. Well, he takes 11 pictures. And in those 11 pictures, and he's standing still while he's taking them, this thing is moving, like frame by frame, moving down. Just, it's a great picture, the first one. But the moving down, it moving down, you can watch the arm come out, you know, to support itself.
Oh, as it goes down? Oh, my God. How interesting. Picture.
And since then, he's been with us on numerous other occasions, and he actually became one of our team members.
He's
going to come out and hang out with us, right?
Maybe.
Okay. He's going to come hang out with us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How exciting, man.
He found us. He had his own sighting, and you know, it was just him. And he wanted to go hiking and find more stuff and look for more stuff, but he was scared to go alone, which is not smart to go alone, I'm gonna tell you. So he found us and
he located us and started and went with us on that first event. And
it all lines. He's
been with us pretty much about ever since.
It's to the point, like if Scott and I go hiking, so we went on this 10-mile hike, about killed ourselves one day during the summertime. We'll never do that again. So I called a friend of mine and I was like, if something happens, if we're not out by 10 o'clock, call Nate. He'll know where to find us. He'll come look for us. I knew he'd come and find us.
That's great. You got like a trail accountability buddy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
One that's wonderful for him too. And this is what the alignment part of this is all about. And this is what we're talking about, like coming out to the event. This is it, guys. This is what we're going to be doing. But it's this plus, you know, Dave Zed, Chris Matthew, Alexander Petikoff, a bunch of folks hanging out all together. It's not an isolated thing where you got to go, you know, buy a book and stand in a line at a booth, but you need to hang out with everybody. And we're going to be going out to Booger Alley with these folks. Mm-hmm. And Scott's Sheila are going to be able to point out exactly what we're talking about here. So excited about this, y'all. This is just a totally different thing. Brings folks together.
We are too. And the event itself, you know, is for the folks that have been to other Bigfoot conferences and things like that, put them on the back burner because that's...
you're sitting in a chair just listening to somebody all day and you're really not getting to interact with them.
You're at a one level thing in there. This event that you're putting on here is heads above that. I mean, because there's interaction, there's a lot more going on.
One-on-one.
A lot of one-on-one stuff.
Tons,
You go, you see some of these other speakers that'll be at these other events, they get up and speak, and then unless you're holding a VIP pass or something, you won't see that individual no more. They're gone. And this event will be nothing like that. All the speakers and folks, they'll be moving around amongst everyone else, and people have their opportunity to get there and talk to them and ask questions and, you know, interact.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, not only for folks attending, but it's great for the other speaker guys, you know, because.
You hear other stories.
You get to hear other stories and everything.
And you guys
want to tell their stories.
Exactly. And y'all connecting with Alexander and Chris, these documentary filmmakers, you know, because y'all have spots to go. You have locations, you know, to go do this stuff at. So everybody connecting. And of course, Les Durant, Dave Baker, those guys were on the Encounters documentary. And Les Durant's on the season 1, episode 3. Dave Baker's on the last 2 episodes of that season 1, now available on Tubi. Mm-hmm. And Chris's documentary, Occult Louisiana, is available on Tubi as well. Your boy may be in that one a couple times, but it's a beautiful thing. All these folks coming together like this, because everybody's got different questions. Everyone's been sort of, you know, tending their gardens, but now it's, let's all come together and build this huge garden together and see what all of us can contribute to this thing.
Exactly. You know, and it's like I said earlier, there are no real experts about any of this. And it's a real good idea, you know, for a lot of folks to be able to get together and bounce their theories off of each other.
Totally.
And we've got a real good friend. He recently passed away. He had a theory about these things, that there were two different types, that there was one that was a flesh and blood creature that was here all the time. Mm-hmm. And then he had a theory that another one, that the other type was an interdimensional type being. And he liked to call them hybrids. And after listening to him tell me about it, you know, and sit down and explain his theory about it and everything, it made a lot of sense. I mean, it really did for a lot of the phenomena that happen. You'll be following a track line of one of these creatures, and all of a sudden it disappears.
It
disappears in an area for no reason, you know, where there's no rock outcroppings for them to jump from rock to rock, or there's no big enough trees to support them to jump into the trees.
And not only just that, we have been in a tent before, you know, and hear the walking, boom. I mean, it'll wake you up from a dead sleep when you hear them walking. You might hear, like, I don't know, 4 steps, and all of a sudden it just stops. You didn't hear it walk back out. You didn't hear it walking around the tin or the stove or anything. What happened?
Yeah.
Are there any smells associated with y'all's nighttime sightings, like in the tent? Did you smell that Bigfoot thing when it was that close?
Never smelled it. The only time I smelled anything was when we were just talking about.
Gotcha.
With the Bigfoot. And
this makes it more selective as well. Like it's almost a gland or marking or something like that, where it doesn't have to stink like that all the time.
It woke us up in the truck.
Oh, that's right. We had one other time. We were sleeping in the truck. It was just me, him, and the friend we were talking about. Dead to the world, because I'd worked all weekend. I was tired or all week. And we were laid back in the seats, and the smell woke us up from a dead sleep. It was horrible.
You're like, sleeping Scott. In. Yeah.
It was worse. Yeah. It was way worse than that.
Like, if I could produce that.
In a Jeep with a hard top on it. You know, and I stress that part because they're more airtight than them soft tops. And we're late. And the only reason we went up there is because our friend, he was camping in this extremely remote area by himself in this area that is a known hotspot to all of us. And I mean, multiple sightings by a lot of different people in this area, and he's telling us he's going to be up there, so we truck on up there, and we're just going to car camp it that night. We were laying there dead to the world. I mean, and all of a sudden, the putrid smell was so bad. We both woke up and looking at each other, and we're kind of like trying to look out the truck, you know, see what's out there because
something had to bring that up there.
It was unreal.
Something made that. Something had to bring that up there.
That's, you know, if you, a cesspond has nothing on what we were smelling.
Man, it's fascinating. It's almost like it's marking its territory or something. It's like, hey, I'm here. It's another call or a whoop or a click or something. It's just evidence that something is there. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, Scott, if you don't mind, tell us the story about the lights and your motion detector lights and that activity in the house. And then we're going to kick it over into the afterthought here, which you guys can join us by checking the link in the show description down there, as well as our hangouts and stuff like that. Y'all can absolutely come join us, as well as come join us for this amazing event that we have. We have stickers and all kinds of stuff that we made for this thing here. These glow in the dark, which is badass. We have little pins and all kinds of cool stuff that'll focus. Anyway. So we have all this cool stuff going on located down in the show description, guys. Check that thing out. So, Scott, you have this fascinating story about this intense encounter that occurred at y'all's house. And then this prompted you to put lights up. And so, please, if you don't mind, sir.
We bought our home here in North Georgia. We'd searched a long time. We finally found the ideal place that we wanted to buy. And we did not know when we were buying this place that it came with its own critters on these ridges. And we'd been living here just a little while, and all of a sudden the side of our house starts getting slapped. Our meter box, that's one of their favorite things to slap. I couldn't ever figure that out until someone mentioned that you have one of those meter boxes that are computer controlled, don't you? And I said, yeah. They said it emits an infrared beam.
Sonar. How dolphins hate sonar underwater. Wow.
And they would slap our gas tank, you know, big propane tank, and that has a really extremely unique sound when it gets slapped.
Yeah.
And the house had floodlights on it on all corners, but they were manual switches. And I went and turned the lights on one day, and the lights didn't come on. I said, well, darn, the lights blew, you know, so I got to switch the lights. I wasn't thinking about it a lot. So to get to these lights takes me putting a 12-foot A-frame ladder up. So I got me two brand new light bulbs. I run up that ladder and I grab hold of the first light bulb and it's loose. So I go to tighten it up. It takes 4/4 turns to tighten that light bulb up. And I reach over and I grab hold of the other one and it's loose. It takes 4/4 turns, one complete revolution to tighten that light bulb up. Now this house doesn't vibrate, you know, or anything like that to loosen those lights up that much. So I'm sitting there thinking, I shimmy down that ladder and I run, flip the switch, the lights come on. And I got to thinking, I'm like, uh-huh. I left right then and went and bought two motion detector lights. Come back and install those. Well, when the motion detector lights miraculously went up, all the slapping on the house stopped. I mean, it was just, the lights would come on, but no house slapping or anything. So that worked out pretty good. And, you know, when you mow your grass and you do your weed eating and everything, you know what's in your yard. Because you're not going to want to run over stuff, you know, with your lawnmower and all that. Well, I had two baseball-sized quartz rocks about 3 foot apart sitting right where I had just weed-eated. I'm like, I saw that and I was like, you know, I know those rocks were not there. And I got looking at them and I'm looking back at toward the house and I start giggling to myself a little bit. And I said, I wonder. So when Sheila gets off work that afternoon, I show it to her and tell her about it. And I said, let's go down the trail. We have a trail that goes down to the creek. Behind
I, ca- I call it the pet cemetery path. Oh,
just that creek. Okay. Yeah. And this is on your property?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Where we live at. So we go down the trail, you know, just a little bit before dusk dark, and we wait down there just talking back and forth to right about time I knew that the lights would activate coming on. So I start walking back up and she's watching. As soon as I get to those rocks, the lights come on. And I'm laughing about it. So I pick the rocks up and I move them forward toward the house about three foot. And we go back in the house. And I'm thinking to myself, I said, yeah, I'll get y'all tonight. And when they come to slip up to the house. Well, I laid there because when the lights come on in the house, I can be in my bed and I can see the lights come on. I lay there in bed, you know, half the night awake because I'm waiting on this. Nothing ever happened the first night. The second night, the lights come on. And I'm laying in bed just laughing my head off because I knew I just got, you know, it's kind of like a game, you know, and it's all about playing a game with different things. And
it's a real those lights
come
energy.
On, I said, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, everything's in. We, our very first expedition, we had something happen. It just blew my mind. So we had separated. I had one group one night and he had another group and he was at one end of the road and I was at the other. And that's the same night that the only male in our group had rocks thrown at him out of the woods. The only male in my group. They wanted him gone. Well, he had heard a growl and seen a huge orb that night.
Basketball size orb.
So the next night we swapped up and then they come down there to the end where we were. But as we're standing there, you're having little tiny rocks being thrown, little rocks. So I have a slingshot. So I take the slingshot and I pick up my own little rocks and I don't shoot to where the rocks are coming from. I shoot away. But as soon as I do that, I am not, I wish we would have videoed all that. Within like 20 seconds, here comes another rock at me. Yeah. Pick up another rock. And everybody was just amazed by this. Like, is there somebody in the wood line, you know, having somebody do that? No, I'm not. There's not a bear out there I know of can do this, you know. But it went on
for a while.
It was the best night we had a little fire there and the group decided to go hike, Scott's group. But when one of them got up to go potty, the little girl's room, she stood up and the back of his Jeep got slapped. Wham! Because there was movement. It was letting everybody else know, I guess. Somebody's moving.
It had done slip, but they were close enough to us. And now those Jeeps are parked like 10 yards away from us. And it slapped side of my Jeep. And
Everybody heard it.
But has it ever slapped hard enough to dent or leave a physical trace evidence or anything like that?
Yes, I've got some good fingerprints and
fingerprints off our Jeeps.
I lifted a set of prints off of his Jeep one.
Way to go, Dick Tracy.
You can see where when he moved the hand back, the fur scraped the dust on the
God. It was awesome. So it had just flat leathery palm, right, and then hair
and
on the back like a primate. And that's another question I had was grease or oils or something like that.
But they got that same night, they got up to go walking down the road, hiking down the road, and he came back and I said, will you go with me behind the Jeep to go to the little girl's room? Nobody had been back there because there was only like four or five of us by the fire. Nobody had moved. So we walk around there and as soon as my flashlight shined the back of my Jeep, I mean, I was about in tears because on the, what do you call that? Fender flare of my Jeep was this river rock. It was about that big, just set up there.
No way.
Was it thrown? Because it would have dented it. There was no other rocks around like that. So I told him, I guess Bigfoot and I are engaged. He gave me a rock.
Yeah, it's official.
Yeah. What was funny about that, like she said, there's no other rocks up there like that. And this was a river stone.
Yeah, round. I mean, it would have slid off.
There's no creek up there where we were at.
Oh.
At that time.
And this river stone had been rolled in red clay. That was what was so cool about it.
It was a pretty rock.
Yes. Matter of fact, she's got it in a curio
cabinet. It's in my curio cabinet. That's how much I think about it.
Of course. So it was a rock that had been like rolled in clay. So the clay was on the outside of it, stuck to it like a wrapping paper or something. Like it wrapped you a gift?
Like you painted it.
Yeah. Like it was painted.
Yeah. Wow.
And there's no way it was thrown up there. We would have heard it. It would have dented the side of my Jeep. I mean, it was placed right there.
God, I bet clay would be a good thing to get prints off of, though, right?
Well, we looked all over it and everything. You couldn't see any recognizable prints.
You could see like a scratch.
Like scratches.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Like, man, he used like a leaf or something to apply it, you know, so he didn't leave any fingerprints, or maybe he wiped his fingerprints off.
I figured he was gifting me for, you know, I figured it was juveniles, and I figured they were gifting me for playing with them with the slingshot.
Absolutely. And so they give you a rock.
Yeah.
It got with them with a slingshot deal where they would throw it from like 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and she would shoot like from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock, not towards where the rocks were coming from. Every time she would shoot, here would come another rock flying.
Yeah.
And it got to where it wasn't many seconds in between shots and all. And this, like I said, that went on for a while.
That was our very first expedition. People were floored. I was floored.
That's amazing. So do you think it was Bigfoot or do you think it was something else?
I think it was a Bigfoot.
Wow. So
I mean, a bear wouldn't have done that.
Were the rocks landing in a pretty consistent place near you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
They were traveling through the leaves of the trees.
They were probably about the size of my thumb, maybe a little bit bigger. Nothing that would take you out or anything
right,
like that.
Right. Obviously not to cause harm, just to get your attention, and it's playful.
Right. And where we were in like a little cul-de-sac, and the ridge kind of went up, not, you know, what was probably about 30 degrees, about 30 degrees. So, yeah.
And this was dark, so you couldn't see where they were coming from?
Very dark. No. I mean, the people that were there, they were just, they couldn't believe it. I mean, how do you explain that?
Right? That's so interesting, you guys. It's just so fascinating.
Nobody else out there, I promise you.
There were nobody else out there.
No one pranking you. Mm-mm. Man, except Bigfoot, right? And he's just playing because he's playful. And we're going to talk about some more examples of that in the afterthought, which we will launch into here in just a little bit. But guys, just want to encourage you to check the show description down there for Squatch Fishing Outfitters on Facebook and TikTok there, as well as the Appalachian Intelligence conversation that we had, the guest spot there. That was a blast, as well as our chat with Andre Mitty over there on Ascension of the Chessmen. So thank you all both so much for just being you and showing up for this. You're some of my favorite people in the world. You're one of my favorite couples ever. And you two are just a breath of fresh air, just everything about you. So I cannot wait to give you big old bear hugs in person. And if you don't mind, we'll go out on a high note here. So you two, just leave us on a high note. What gets you out of bed every single morning? Adorable.
Getting the day started and heading closer to the weekend so we can be out in the woods.
That's it. We got to get everything done early so we go do what we want to do.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.